Hey guys, welcome to another fabulous episode of In Your Head with yours truly, Chris Medina. I've got yet another fantastic guest. I am so fucking excited to have her on. This woman and her work is right up my alley. You guys know when it comes to weed, I support it 100%, like I support this woman 100%. Without any further introductions, let me introduce you to cannabis journalist, the beautiful, the one and only, Madison Margolin.
Hi, thanks for having me.
No problem. Thank you for coming on. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Did you like that introduction?
Yeah, that was cool.
I'm so happy to have you on. I am a huge pothead.
Yeah.
I mean, I love weed. I get down with it all the time. I've been smoking it ever since I was a kid. Mm-hmm. Actually grew up with it. And to have somebody on here that writes about it, that knows about it, that speaks about it from the heart, I'm all about it.
Thank you.
So please tell us about you.
I'm a cannabis journalist. I am an editor at Civilized, which is a cannabis publication. And I've also written for Rolling Stone, Playboy, LA Weekly, High Times, Mary Jane, all the sort of cannabis publications and and non-cannabis publications. And I've written about everything related to cannabis, science, agriculture, politics, that kind of stuff. Also, one of the main things that I really like to write about is cannabis and spirituality, and like looking at cannabis as a sacrament, or how it fits into like different religious or spiritual contexts, like Hinduism or Judaism or Christianity or really any kind of practice. So that's kind of like a subbeat that I have interest in.
That is, again, is right up my alley. I am all about spirituality, of course. Mm-hmm. I'm a psychic medium, and about pot.
Right.
I always tell people that the reason why I smoke it is because I am so on throughout the day. Mm-hmm. My mind never shuts the fuck up. I'm always thinking. I'm always getting hits. I'm always getting visions and, you know, picking up psychic stuff. So at night is my time to unwind. That's yeah. where I light up, smoke, relax. It doesn't take away the voices, doesn't take away the thoughts or the psychic impressions. It just allows me not to get so wrapped up into it.
Right.
How do you utilize it? What do you use it for?
People think that I smoke way more than I do. I come from a pretty pothead, heavy pot smoking family. So uh-huh. both my parents are kind of like chimneys. I don't smoke that much. I always seem to be surrounded by people who smoke a lot. And so uh-huh. I smoke on the weekends and evenings, as people say. I'm trying to get a little bit more into edibles, like microdosing edibles, but it hasn't been my favorite thing so far.
I am an old school pot smoker. Yeah. So edibles for me, mm-hmm. horrible.
I've had really bad edible experiences, which is why for years I wouldn't touch them. And uh-huh. then just literally 2 nights ago, like a very close friend and I decided to split a candy and it went great, but I think it was because I was with the right person. So
it's a totally different high, though. It is mm-hmm. a body high, and it's a longer lasting high that bleeds into the next morning.
Yeah.
But let me tell you why, because I took an edible last night and mm-hmm. I am dragging ass right now. My eyes are so swollen and they hurt. But yeah, it's a completely different high. I don't like doing it. Jay, mm-hmm. my business partner, the one that hooked this up,
yeah.
actually loves eating edibles. I hate them. I'd rather just smoke it. Mm-hmm. I'm old school. I'm either roll me a joint or put it in a pipe.
I prefer joints. That's my favorite.
Me too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's back up here for a second. I want the audience to know all about you. I want to definitely promote what it is that you're doing. Mm-hmm. I love your energy. Meeting you and coming to the door mm-hmm. when we first met, instantly. You know, this is my podcast, In Your Head. I'm a psychic medium. I have to read. Right when I saw you, I picked up energy immediately. There's a lot of past life energy that I feel like bleeds into this lifetime when it comes to you. You've got a very, very 60s East Coast type of vibe to me. That's where I picked up your last life being. So I'm wondering if that plays into what's going on with you now and being surrounded by pot and what it is that you're writing about here. Mm-hmm. But you seem very open to me. There's something unique about your eyes, not only because they're big and beautiful, but they seem to be awake here. And I mentioned earlier, I gave you a quick reading right mm-hmm. before we started the podcast and told you what was going on with you here. How did you feel about that?
I mean, I was intrigued because like I said before, usually I think a lot of people who do Reiki class for a day and say they're energy healers are full of shit. So
girl, I love you. I love you. Thank you for coming on.
You know, I'm from California. I'm from LA. I'm from California. Like, I'm exposed to a lot of people who wear their spirituality on their sleeve. And it gets very disappointing when you find out that they're They're just full of it, and it's their aesthetic. And A, your aesthetic, you're wearing an Adidas shirt right now, which you're not really going around putting Bindi on your head and all of that.
Yeah, and wearing a turban or right. carrying a crystal ball in my back pocket.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, you know, that already speaks very well to what you're doing.
Thank
but
you.
The sort of reading that you gave me really did tap into a genuine things that you were seeming to find out or to pick up on about me. And so that, I'd say, validates a lot of what you're saying. Mm-hmm. So as far as the 60s thing goes, I've always been really drawn to it. I don't know why. My mother is from New York, so she spent a lot of time, probably closer to the 70s, just based on when she was born, in upstate New York, you know, dropping acid in upstate New York, which is,
having a good time doing the 70s. Huh?
And then my dad, who's a little bit older than my mom, he started his law practice in 1967, defending marijuana cases, like all these kids getting busted. And so he was very much of the time period in the 60s. So kind of knowing that that's part of my legacy has been great, or I guess been very influential. I guess one thing going on around that time was that My father's guru, Neem Karoli Baba, who's the same guru as Ram Dass, in the early 60s, Ram Dass and Timothy Leary were on the East Coast. They had actually a home in upstate New York, you know, sort of as kind of their acid outpost after Harvard. So,
what is the background on these two people?
So Timothy Leary discovered mushrooms in Mexico. Richard Alpert, both were like psychologists from Harvard, like mm-hmm. professors or researchers or whatever. And they started doing experiments with psilocybin mushrooms and LSD at Harvard and eventually got kicked out. They took it too far. So Timothy Leary kind of, you know, made his way to the West Coast. He was a total rascal. My dad actually defended him on like a charge when he tried to escape from jail and, you know, all sorts, you know, so he was just a rascal. He was always like on the run, trying to escape, getting busted, that kind of thing. Richard Alpert, you know, this like nice Jewish boy from like, I think his family was from Massachusetts, I want to say, but I could be wrong. Mm-hmm. He was like, acid's not doing it for me. I can trip as many times as I want, but there's some sort of more spiritual element that I'm seeking. So he made his way to India and met Neem Karoli Baba, or Maharaji, as they call him, who became Richard Alpert's guru and, you know, gave him his spiritual name, Ram Dass. So, and that became his trip. And, you know, the whole reason basically yoga has made its way back to the West is you can thank Ram Dass for really opening people up to that philosophy and spiritual practice. Mm-hmm. So that was all going on in the 60s, basically 60s and 70s. And as far as the music and the colors and all of that, I don't know. I've just always been attracted to it.
It seems like their karma or what they were doing set the tone for your birth, kind of, because look at where you're going in the direction that you've gone in.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. But yeah, you... I don't know if you want, I'm just going to put it out there.
Yeah.
You're a Gemini, sun in Gemini,
yeah.
moon in Leo, mm-hmm. Virgo rising. I fuck with Geminis all the time. Communication between the two of us is amazing. We can sit here and talk all day mm-hmm. long. And I instantly felt, I wouldn't say connected, but comfortable with you.
Yeah.
I just didn't know if you were going to be comfortable with me because it takes a long time for a Gemini to warm up here.
Yeah, exactly.
But you are naturally intuitive. I just don't know whether or not, like I said in your reading earlier, whether or not you throw it outside of your head and use it in the everyday world mm-hmm. instead of just locking it in and keeping it and just internalizing with it. But there's just something unique about your path, your journey here and while you're on Earth that I just, again, it sounds like every reading that I give on my show is a very positive reading, mm-hmm. but I just don't have anything negative to say with it. I just think that you're going to be on your way and do what it is that you're going to be doing. I feel like, again, 28, 29 is going to be the year where things start to click. And then mm-hmm. by 32, 33 is when you've already made your way. You've already established who you are. And then more, you know, obviously more lessons. You're never done learning,
yeah.
but I feel like you're going to be really comfortable with yourself at that time in that space.
That gives me good things to look forward to.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So tell me about your writing. Tell me how you got into it. You said Playboy, High Times.
Yeah.
Huge fan of High Times.
Yeah.
How did that all begin?
So I always loved writing. In college, speaking of the 60s thing, I went to Berkeley and lived in a co-op. So, just talk about a time capsule. But I was always into writing. I studied rhetoric and linguistics, but I thought I was going to go to law school. I was like, wanted to take after my dad, basically. So I kind of shut that down a little bit. Like, yeah, I write, but I'm a good writer, but I'm going to do law school instead. So I must have taken the LSAT like four times, or not taken it four times, sorry. I walked out of the test. I didn't show up. I canceled my score. Finally, on the fourth try, I was like, okay, I'm just going to keep the score and I'm never taking this test again. Mm-hmm. And I was applying to law schools and willy-nilly kind of opened up an application for Columbia Journalism School and didn't finish it. And then the dean called me like five months later and was like, are you going to finish your application? I said, nah, I have no experience in journalism. Why would I? I'm not qualified. I'm not going to get in. And she's like, why don't you just complete the application and see? And I got in and I'm like, fuck it. I wanted to go to New York. This is my ticket to New York. I'm doing it and I'm going to go to Columbia Journalism School. And I had no idea what I was getting myself into. Mm-hmm. Aside from I like writing and I like being kind of like a student of life. And journalism is this great thing where you get to, I have an excuse basically to just do what I want to do anyway and make it my job. Uh-huh. So whether it's like going to festivals with like Hasidic Jews and like learning about kind of like Jews and drugs, or whether it's going to a pot farm or going to a science lab or anything like that, like things that I'm naturally curious in, now I can just be like, it's my job and I'm going to get paid to do this.
That's your excuse. That's your go-to. Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. So that's how I got into writing. So just basically through journalism school. And after that, I wrote something about New York's medical marijuana program, like for a magazine class. I pitched that to the Village Voice. I got a job from that feature being like, hey, can you cover the rollout of New York's medical marijuana program? Mm-hmm. So I did that until the program launched, and then
so they published your work in the Village Voice.
Mm-hmm. I was writing for them for like 9 months.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Jeez.
Yeah, it was pretty turbulent over there. That was right around when the paper got sold. So Voice Media Group owned the Village Voice, and then Peter Barbie bought the paper, and so it was going through a lot of transition. But I was lucky to be there at a time when New York was still fleshing out its medical marijuana program, and I was talking to legislators and covering the really nascent industry there and stuff like that. So by the time the program launched, there wasn't as much to write about, and I sort of started looking. I pitched Rolling Stone and got a story in there about like the presidential candidate's view on pot, and kind of kept rolling with the freelancing thing. So I just went full-time freelance after that.
What is your connection with pot, and what made you go in that direction?
So I've never been much of a pot smoker myself. Like I love people who are into weed. Mm-hmm. Like everyone who's close in my life basically is a huge stoner, and I'm so comfortable around the plant.
Well, they're the best people to be around, stoners. Yeah. They don't want anything from you. They just want to relax and have a good time.
Yeah, and I'm so blessed that I get to like interview these people all the time and meet them, and these are my colleagues, are people who are just really into weed, so that makes me happy. So wait, so the question was
what led you to go to write about pot?
Right, to get into pot. So I'd say
Hold on, we're not stone audience right now.
Right, sometimes people think I'm high when I'm not, but that's another story. So my dad's a criminal defense lawyer. He focused on marijuana law, just kind of. So I grew up like, you know, working in his office. Sometimes he has a guide, the Margolin Guide to Marijuana Laws, and I would like edit the guide for him and kind of help him out a little bit.
Jeez.
And I was sitting, he had his office right off Sunset Strip, and he had growers and dealers and kids my age who were getting busted, you know, mainly because they weren't white. And that's really the injustice of the drug war, is just a completely racist systemic scheme. And so I was really interested in cannabis legalization from like a social justice point of view, just like seeing my dad kind of fight for legalization. He ran for governor against Schwarzenegger in the recall race, and he had this radio jingle by the Cottonmouth Kings, like 1-800-420-LAWS, Bruce Margolin's down for the cause. I was so embarrassed. I was this like straight A, like 12-year-old, really quiet kid. And like the DARE officer now was like harassing me at lunchtime. Like, what's going on at home? And I'm like, fuck off. Like, I'm getting A's. Like, what's the I'm not so, like.
You dig in your backpack. You're all here. Smoke this and chill the fuck out.
Yeah, it was just, yeah. So I was really embarrassed about it. But I was like, okay, I can't, like, resent my dad for doing his thing. And I, you know, like, through high school and whatever, I was like, okay, like, marijuana legalization is, like, really legitimate. And at that point, it wasn't as trendy as it is now. So when I didn't think I was going to make a career out of weed, though. So when I was in journalism school, in this magazine class, I was like, what do I write about? And I was like, oh, like New York has a medical marijuana program. Like, that's weird. I thought only California was really at the forefront, you know, or California and Colorado. So I was like, I'm just going to like learn about this new program and write about it. And I did. And that's kind of how the Village Voice offered me this job based on that story. And after that, I realized I was like really in love with writing about it, because when you write about cannabis, you're actually able to write about everything else that cannabis touches. So science, policy, technology, agriculture, spirituality, industry, feminism, like the cannabis plant touches everything else in the world, basically.
Just like the smoke itself, it infiltrates everything else around it. Yeah.
So I was like, I can write about everything else just by writing about weed. Mm-hmm. And I fell in love with it. So, and I was inspired by my dad. I will say, like, people are sometimes like, oh, the whole family's into weed, whatever. I mean, like, I am inspired by him, but he doesn't, like, hook me up with interviews or stuff like that. I got into a Facebook argument with someone recently about that, so.
Fucking trolls. They're everywhere.
A little bit of a troll.
Considering who your father is, and two, I mean, you are kind of looked at, I mean, for the stoner community, I'm not trying to be funny here, as, like, an icon or, like, a hero, because your dad was at the forefront of it all. Mm-hmm. Looking back in hindsight, as a kid, I mean, you were embarrassed, obviously, in school, but now looking back, are you proud of your dad's work and his legacy?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you know, my dad's totally a weirdo. I mean, in the best possible way. He's on the one hand, he's like a suited up Jewish lawyer. And on the other hand, he's like a total hippie, you know, like has a Hindu name and all sorts of things. I'm really proud of where I come from in that regard, and also appreciative that I didn't have a boring upbringing, even if it was like a lot to handle and chaotic and embarrassing at different points. But
it just sets you up to continue the legacy, because like I said earlier, giving you that reading, there is no doubt in my mind that you're going to excel, you're going to achieve, and you're going to create your own legacy that you're going to leave behind for this cause and everything else that you touch, because the passion that you have is so strong and you want to speak on it. So again, I'm so excited, interested to see where you go with this and how much of it grows because of you. No pun intended, like weed, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, God willing. Uh-huh.
So what else is going on with you? What is it like in your personal life? We don't have to get too personal, but like, I know that you said you're not a big pot smoker, but do you chill on the weekend smoking weed? Like, are you in a relationship?
Yeah, of course. My boyfriend smokes a lot of weed. He really uses it medically. Like, I just can see the difference. Like, it's so good for his mind. Mm-hmm. And he's a big spliff smoker. So I will, you know, like take a hit or two here and there when he's smoking. I can't get any work done when I'm high. And on the weekends, yeah, I'm pretty down as long as it's like a little bit later in the day, because it might make me tired too early and then I'll end up napping.
So you like to get everything done throughout the day and then chill to it.
Yeah.
That's how I like to do it.
Yeah.
Too.
Sometimes it's good. It's good for like a concert or a movie or like, you know, like walking around. It's cool if you're walking around in a neighborhood that you're already very familiar with, and then you get high and then you start to notice different things about it and you feel like you're on a vacation.
Mm-hmm. What about those people that get stoned and that are able to get up and go shopping, go to work? And
that's
do all
not the, me.
Me neither.
I know there are so many people who do that, and I power to them, and I write about them, and I interview them and all sorts of things, and I marvel at it because I really am not a functional
stoner.
Yeah,
no,
not at all.
I knew a friend that would get stoned in the morning, put on his rollerblades, mm-hmm. and go rollerblading. I was like, I would be asleep. The first thing that I want to do after I smoke is eat.
Yeah.
And just chill out and eat. So I am like the worst stoner when it comes to that. But yeah, it's interesting that you write about it. You're not a huge pot smoker, but you respect it, and you do get down every now and then with it.
Yeah, absolutely.
When it comes to spirituality and your beliefs in it, how does marijuana play into it? What do you think it does for the spiritual side of people?
My dad's, I think this is very ironic. My dad says that it like lessens the ego, right? Like if you get high enough, your ego starts to be a little more quiet, which is funny because there are so many people in the cannabis space and their egos are humongous. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's this irony of like, are you overcompensating for when you're not high, like getting your ego reinflated? But not trying to throw too much shade there, but
it's true though. Keep throwing shade, because this show is all about shade.
Okay.
Yeah.
So no, but spiritually, I mean, I use it. So I didn't grow up very religious, but I do think of Shabbat, which is the Jewish Sabbath, as like an altered state. You know, if you did grow up more religious, you'd probably know, like Jewish people who grew up Orthodox Jewish probably know that there are certain things you can't even really think about on Shabbos. So like if someone died, you can't mourn until after Shabbat is over. So So it's a really interesting way of tapping into like another soul of who you are. And so for me, like on Friday nights, I like to like smoke weed and get into Shabbos mode. So I'll like, I won't check my social media or my email for the duration of Shabbat. And really like cannabis helps me in that sort of like in Shabbos mode, which is, it mm-hmm. sounds like a joke, but for me, it's like a very religious spiritual thing that it's the highlight of my week. And like probably like the best decision I ever made about like 2 years ago at this point was to start observing Shabbos in that way.
Nice. Yeah. When it comes to me and me smoking mm-hmm. it, I honestly think we kind of share the same belief system here when it comes to like karma and things like yeah. that. I don't like to give, I will never give a reading while I'm stoned.
Yeah.
I won't smoke it before a reading. I won't do an interview stoned. Mm-hmm. I wait till the end of the night to do it because, again, I just feel like it takes away or it's kind of disrespectful. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, I think some people are better with it, you know? Mm-hmm. So, like, I would never, you know, like, if I'm trying to have a serious conversation with my mom or my boyfriend or something, like, if they're high for the conversation, I won't care because I know that cannabis makes them, like, better mm-hmm. versions of who they are. But there are some scenarios where I do feel like, you know, don't be high for this.
What about like, what's it called? Dabs.
Mm-hmm.
Are you into dabs?
I'm afraid of dabs. I've dabbed before and I just got so high and you never know how it's going to hit you.
See, that's the one that I've never tried it.
I dabbed CBD.
Really?
Yeah, it was good.
Oh, I'm afraid. Like, I am old school. Like, again, there's a lot of people that claim to be stoners, and they are stoners for the most part because they are belligerent when it comes to it. They mm-hmm. smoke until they're, I don't know, zombies.
Yeah.
I like to smoke a good bowl,
yeah.
at least a whole bowl, or maybe a half of a joint, and I want to be high, but I want to be high in a sense of calm and relaxed, not mm-hmm. obliterated.
Right.
Do you smoke to get obliterated? Or you
no.
Just,
yeah. No, if I smoke, it's either because I want to chill, I really do like the act of smoking. I like the way it feels to smoke a joint.
Me too.
So part of it is that. And then, yeah, it's good for relaxing at home, for eating, for having sex, for watching a movie, for going to the museum.
I can't fuck on it. I don't know about you. I can't.
Oh, I totally can.
Oh, no, yeah. I can't. I am like, I don't know what it is. It's I'm lazy and I'm kind of like,
you know, they say it affects men and women differently.
Really?
So, yeah. So for women, it's supposed to be a really good aphrodisiac. For men, people have basically said, like, the guy should stop smoking before the girl does. So she can smoke up until or during or whatever until you're having sex. But the guy might actually just either, you know, a joke like stoner boner or something.
You're giving me another reason to hate God for not making me a woman. I'm just kidding. But yeah. Really? Well, that's true?
Yeah. I mean, it depends on the person, of course. But I've had it. You know, I've had a cannabis scientist tell me that, you know, if you're going to use it for sex, the girl should smoke, you know, has a greater capacity to have stoned sex than the guy.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't do it. I will fall asleep. I'm just like inactive. I feel like, you know, when a dog gets tired and it falls over, that's what I feel like.
Yeah.
Like I'm going to fall over.
I mean, there are times where I get so high and it depends on the strain that I'm just like tired and just want to have like a really yummy sleep.
What is you know? Your strain?
I don't know. I think I was into this one gelato for a while.
Uh-huh.
I usually try to go toward like indica dominant high CBD hybrids or indica dominant hybrids with a lot of CBD just because the headier strains, which I mean, I like Blue Dream. I mean, that's a good
Blue Dream's a good strain.
Uh-huh. Yeah. But I was living in New York for a while, which means that I didn't really have so much opportunity to just go to a dispensary and pick out, you know that this is the strain that I like or whatever. So now that I just moved back to California, I'm really excited to be doing that more often, just to know better what I like and what works for me. Because I didn't have as much say over what I was smoking when I was in New York.
I usually get my stuff. I don't know where you get yours, but I'm closer to the Valley. Mm. And I go to Sherman Oaks and there's a store called Buds and Roses.
Oh, yeah, I know them.
Do you like their stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't been there in a while, but I've interviewed the guy who owns it.
Aaron
Justice, yeah. Yeah,
I don't know what it is about their weed, but their weed is not so stony. It doesn't leave you hungover.
Mm-hmm.
But I like to get stoned with a good sativa during the day and then end it, if I'm not working, during the day and end it with an indica.
Yeah.
But the CBD oil stuff, Jay and I just got a strain where it was a sativa, but it was high in CBD.
Mm.
I don't like it. It doesn't get me stoned.
What's the strain?
Gosh, I forgot the name of the strain.
I mean, people say the sativa indica thing is bullshit, right? So it's really just a matter of what the terpene profile is. Terpenes being like the aromatic chemicals that sort of give the strain its like qualities, or it's, you know, it's personality, really. Uh-huh. So like indica sativa, you could be like, okay, indicas are more like lazy, like body high, and sativas are more energetic, head high. Okay, but it really doesn't mean that much. It's really more about the terpene profile, mm-hmm. and then the also ratio of cannabinoids. Basically, probably the reason the CBD sativa is not getting you high is because CBD acts as an antidote to THC. So it's sort of like, if you're too high on THC, if you like vape some CBD or take a capsule or something, you'll come down a little bit.
The CBD seems to relax my body, mm-hmm. but it doesn't get me stoned. And I like the stony head high.
Yeah, it's not psychoactive, really, or not psychotropic. It'll give you a calm effect, but it's not like that stony high at all.
And why do you take it? Do you have trouble relaxing with your body and stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I get anxious really easily. Uh-huh. And sometimes when I'm high on THC, it can go great. And sometimes I get way too much in my head and really quiet and feel like I'm just like not interacting with people. You know, I start to be like, oh my God, am I too high, or am I acting too high? Or it just, I start make my mind start making too much noise.
It's the Gemini in you.
Yeah. So I'll vape CBD to come down a little bit, just because I don't want to be that high if the high isn't in the direction that I want it to be.
Yeah. Jay loves edibles. He loves anything that has mm-hmm. CBD in it. I can't do it. It relaxes me, but I need to be stoned.
Yeah.
I like that head high.
Right. CBD is more of like a supplement. Like, I'm going to start an experiment where I take CBD for a month and see what happens, because they say when it builds up in your system, it acts as like an anti-anxiety, antidepressant, like a general wellness thing. So
it's a natural remedy.
Yeah.
I don't know about you, but I need to take a break from weed every now and then. I smoke so much of it that I don't get high.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's because my mind is so active all the time that it just kicks it out.
Yeah.
But I need to take at least 2 or 3 months of just cold turkey. And not a lot of people can do that, but mm-hmm. I will brave the bad mood for that week. People say it's not an addictive drug. To me, it is. And there are side effects when you mm-hmm. quit it. Mm-hmm. And it's always, I'm depressed for the first 3 days.
Yeah.
And then I start to unwind and come back into myself. My sleep patterns start to even out by the third week here. But yeah, I need to take a break. Do you need to take a break too? Or
I don't think I smoke enough, honestly, to necessitate that. I mean, I don't smoke every day, that's for sure. Maybe like tops like 3 or 4 times a week at night. But it's not, if I'm not exposed to it, I'm not craving it, really. So, I mean, yeah, like, I guess there have been periods where I was just overexposed and smoking a lot, but it's never...
It's not as bad as I get.
I just don't feel like I need it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's, I guess, part of it. It's like, I have a very distant relationship to cannabis in some ways. But also, like you said, I mean, it shouldn't technically be like a physical dependence. However, your endocannabinoid system, which is a physical thing throughout your body, that definitely an adjustment if you all of a sudden stop using it.
But also my own stupidity comes into play, and I'll get in a, like something will happen like throughout the day, like I'll get a bad hit or some, or just I'll have a horrible reading. The person, their energy's fucked. And I will use that as an excuse to tell Jay, you know what, forget it. I'll go clean next week here, because I'm, you know, that's my own way of thinking here.
Well, if that's what you need to kind of clean off after like intense readings and stuff, why not?
Exactly. Stop denying yourself that, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, unless you really feel like it's somehow I get like wanting to take a break, like bring down your tolerance, whatever. Maybe another thing that I've researched or written about is if you want to kind of change your tolerance, to switch up the strains or the way that you're in consuming, because it might just be the habit of a particular type of
strain that you become accustomed to.
Yeah.
Do you like vaping?
It depends what I'm vaping.
I can't do it. There's something different about the way that it goes in my lungs mm-hmm. and the way that it comes out and the high that I get.
I definitely prefer flower.
Big time.
Yeah.
Again, I usually get like a really nasty cough after the vape. So vapes and I don't go together.
It depends what the make of the vape is. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of these vapes or the oils, they're the solvents. You need to make sure that they're not cut with anything that's going to be making you cough or make you sick or be carcinogenic to the after it heats up past a certain point. Because the concentrate, when you're heating up the concentrate, you know it's concentrating the THC and CBD and the other cannabinoids at a certain rate, but you don't know how the other chemicals in the oil are also going to be concentrated.
We'll have to go shopping one day and you'll have to pick something out that I can get down with. But yeah, vaping, no. Joints, pipe, all that stuff. I'm old school. That's where I like to keep it.
Mm-hmm.
In your profession, writing about weed, because everyone's a weed smoker now, everyone's into pot. Have you interviewed any famous rappers? Or as a writer, have you gotten any good gifts, like a good gift basket of weed?
Oh my God, I get swag all the time.
I hate you. I hate you.
Every weed event comes with a swag bag. That's like worth $100 worth of swag.
Oh my God.
I actually interviewed Lizzie Jeff. She's a medicine woman, rapper, kind of goddess figure in the LA weed scene. Everyone should look her up. She's incredible. She's
What's
stunning.
Her name?
Lizzie Jeff.
Definitely gonna look
and
her up.
And she has this event series called Zen and Kush. I went to Zen and Kush, and she's kind of, it was like right before or like in the between like different sets where she was rapping, and you know, she's like, let me hit this joint. And I kind of described the way she was like, she's so regal, and the way that she interacts with cannabis and like other sorts of herbs is like, she elevates it along with her, you know, along with her vibe, because she has such a high vibe that like the cannabis is like such a beautiful accessory to that. So that I had a lot of fun describing Lizzie Jeff's.
Would it be fair to say that she expresses what she's smoking? Does
yeah.
that make sense? Like,
yeah, I would
like
say
showing
that's,
the...
Yeah, I would say that's definitely... She really honors the plant in a way where, you know, she lets it be, you know, almost like the plant medicine can speak for itself, whether it's through her, whether she's advocating for it, or...
I've got to check that out.
Yeah, she's really great, and I interviewed her, you know, we also had a follow-up interview, and she was so open with me and so genuine in a way that I was very pleasantly surprised, because... Like I said earlier, you know, being in like the LA weed scene or the LA spiritual scene or whatever, you meet a lot of people who are just kind of full of it, and they can talk the talk, but it's like, how much is it really seeping into you?
I love the fact that you're born and raised in LA, right?
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
And you share the same views as I do. It's but like... we'll talk about spirituality in a second, but when it comes to weed, it's such a trendy fucking thing right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm Cheech and Chong. That's what I grew up on. My dad is a biker. We had weed in the house at a young age. I mean, mm-hmm. I love the smell of it. Like 3 or 4 years old, I was like, oh my God, I love it.
Yeah.
I was always around it, always, you know, witnessing what was going on with it. And I grew up that way. And to see this being a trendy thing where everyone's smoking it, I'm like, fuck, they're making it harder for the rest of us to get good shit or to have to wait these long ass lines.
Yeah.
And it's more of like you said earlier, when it came to spirituality, mm-hmm. it's more for aesthetics.
Mm-hmm.
It's more to look cool and to fit in. But to me, it's a lifestyle. It's what I do. This is something that I use on a daily basis. When it comes to spirituality, you mentioned something earlier too, where again, aesthetics, like mm-hmm. I just said, when it comes to that and it comes to your views on spirituality and even me as a psychic, do you feel honestly in LA it's overplayed?
The spirituality thing?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I like that people at least care enough, but as far as the like nouveau spirituality crystals and Reiki and yoga and the sort of LA brand of spirituality, that's the thing, is when your spirituality is branded, that's where I start to question it. So
I love it.
I don't believe in like, I don't think spirituality and commercialism have any place in the same sentence or room or whatever. And so when I start to see too much money around ways to get spiritual, yeah, of course you could do this for X amount of money, $300, $400. And I get, again, like people will pay to have tickets to go to Rosh Hashanah services, mm-hmm. or you pay for a yoga class. And of course the person providing the service and helping you access that deserves to be paid.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess I see it when it's too trendy, when it's so trendy, it makes me question the legitimacy of it.
100 fucking percent.
So, and I that's not to throw shade on specific people, but there are a lot of people who do, and they just throw around words like love and
namaste, love and light and all that other shit.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm like, I'm not taking you seriously, and we don't have that kind of connection that I want you to tell me you love me. Objectively, you're a human being, and I'll give you all the respect you deserve as a human being.
But you don't know me well enough to love me.
Yeah, and so it really... I'm really not good at like playing that game with people.
Neither am I. I had mentioned the first time that I did my podcast, because I was real hesitant doing it, that
mm-hmm.
I wanted to be known as the Howard Stern of psychics,
mm-hmm.
that I wanted to change the game in the way the world views psychics and people that are in my profession, because it's oversaturated. It is a trendy fucking thing. These vision boards, the chakra stuff,
crystals
and Reiki. It's more aesthetics.
It's just like been so appropriated by people who don't know enough about it that it's like hard, especially for someone like me or probably the general public who I don't know one from the other. So how many do I have to go through to be like, this person's real and this person isn't?
Exactly.
You know, you really have to sharpen your judgment, and you have to discriminate between who.
But not a lot of people are doing that, though. Not a lot of people are discriminating. And that's such a horrible word to use, yeah. But we'll use speaking up.
As a journalist, like, when I vet people, I'm like, where's your cannabis oil sourced from? How is it made? Where's it grown? Who's the company? Like, do they hire minorities? Do they hire women? Like, do they treat their employees right? Like, really interrogate where this thing is coming from before you go ahead and tell me that you're the best new thing on the market.
My advice when it comes to psychic readings, people mm-hmm. say, Chris, how do I maximize a psychic reading?
Mm-hmm.
You go in there, you don't say shit.
Yeah.
I didn't ask you to say anything to me. I wasn't asking you questions. I just went in. That's how you test a psychic. If mm-hmm. they're really psychic, let them tell you.
Right.
They're not going to give you their name right off the bat. I'm not going to know your name, you know.
Yeah.
If that was the case, I'd be a billionaire.
Yeah.
But let them work for it. Let them prove their ability to you.
Mm-hmm.
Don't tell them anything.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what that's how I like to operate. Don't tell me anything. For the first 10 to 15 minutes of the reading, I'm going to go in and give you what I'm getting directly so you know whether I'm fake
yeah.
or I'm real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really interesting, like, watching you.
Again, what is next for you? What do you want to accomplish? What do you want to leave behind? Your dad, your mom, you have done so much.
Yeah.
What does Madison want to leave behind?
I mean, I want to write books. So I have a few, like, ideas percolating. I, like, wrote one proposal already. I have another one another sort of totally different, like, more memoir-style idea that I'm working on. I don't want to say too much now because I don't want too much energy, outside energy, like, on the
If these mics weren't so sensitive,
yeah.
I'd be hugging you right now because we share the same views on shit.
Yeah.
But go on, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, so no, that's, like, my baby. I don't know, maybe they're still in egg formation right now. I don't know what they are, but yeah, so those are some things that I want to really pursue. I want to be traveling more. I mean, I travel a lot already. I was really lucky to be freelancing, and sort of I was able to do what I wanted from wherever I wanted. And so now I have a full-time job. But even so, you know, I want to go back to India. When I was there in the spring, I was interviewing sadhus and kind of like Chilambabas, as my dad calls them, who are Shiva devotees. So their main deity is Shiva, who's like the lord of yoga and mind-altering substances. And these Shiva devotees they use cannabis as a sacrament. It's part of their practice in yoga and meditation and prayer. It was really fascinating for me getting to know some of them. One guy was a priest in Jageshwar, which is in, like, way northern India, and he showed me his whole routine, and we smoked in his little ashram, and then we went on a hike, and how he showed me all his meditation techniques and stuff like that, and how cannabis helps. So that was great. So more of that, more like experiential journalism, like mm-hmm. kind of like Gonzo, like, you know.
What
Hunter
about
Thompson.
Recording the experience and you doing like a documentary or a docu-series?
Yeah, I mean, I would really like to learn how to use a camera. So I'm much more of a writer than I am a technician with cameras. However, I recognize the value in like film and stuff like that. So if I could work with somebody who is documentarian, like really going around and like really understanding this, how cannabis is used spiritually, I think is really where my heart is at. And writing about that also in like my own books or memoirs or whatever. So yeah, more long form stuff, whether it's a book, an article, or memoir, or a book, an article, or a documentary.
And you got a few tricks up your sleeve that you're waiting to throw out there?
Maybe. I hope so. I mean, yeah, I put out like one thing that I hope is going to manifest into something that is mm-hmm. going to be bigger, hopefully a book.
Yeah, I said earlier, I just don't see you being in California for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
I definitely feel abroad. I'm going to steal from what you said, abroad
mm-hmm.
and traveling a lot more and getting more experience. The image that I get in my mind's eye is you looking from above a wall. So you're looking at the sights around you. And to me, again, I said it looks sandy. So you're probably going to go back to where you're from
mm-hmm.
or you know, Israel.
I'm not Israeli, but I'm Jewish, so I guess there's like a weird connection there.
You're gonna probably document that. You're gonna be documenting mm-hmm. that, and then the rise of things coming on. I just see you all over the place.
Yeah, I am very much all over the place. I'm always doing a million things.
But
Israel,
that works for you though.
And it works for me. Really, I think I'd get bored if I didn't do that. Like, I mean, right now I'm happy to be grounded in LA, which is home. But yeah, I mean, I don't ever foresee that I'm ever going to be the most grounded person ever. It's just not who I am. So any sort of traveling or being abroad in Israel has always been like a home to me. I lived there not for very long, for like 6 months in 2014. And I basically visited ever since. And I am trying to really write more stories that come out of the region. I just wrote something for Playboy on PTSD and among Israelis and Palestinians, and how dealing with the conflict between Israel and Palestine is really at its core also about healing from trauma and PTSD, and like how can we create policies that address that both sides are traumatized, and how can we not exacerbate those traumas? Because right now, you know, what's going on, you know, in Gaza, for instance, like just being on the street, the way people are interacting with each other is so much a function of trauma. Mm-hmm. And the region needs healing so badly. However, you know, there's hashish, there's cannabis there, medical marijuana, at least in Israel. And among Palestinians, I think there's a little bit more stigma around it. But yeah, I believe in the cannabis solution.
What are some of your favorite dispensaries in the LA area to go to?
Oh, my favorite dispensaries. I really like Herba. So Herba is one of my favorite dispensaries. My mom actually worked there for a minute. She was like a brand rep for Dosist working at Herba. LAPCG is in West Hollywood. Green Goddess Collective is good, mm-hmm. and that's in Venice. Yeah, I'm honestly still exploring. I just moved back to LA, and I now have more time to do this.
Have you ever been to Oregon?
I've been to Portland, yeah.
The dispensaries in Oregon kick ass.
Yeah.
I don't know. Their weed is clean out there. I know it's not Cali weed. I mean, they mm-hmm. probably get some of their stuff from Cali.
Yeah.
But their weed is, I don't know how else to say it, but other than organic.
Mm-hmm.
The high is a very clean high. It's not too stony where you're waking up hungover. Like, some of the strains are just so strong.
Yeah.
But yeah. Have you ever smoked Tide Stick?
No.
It's old school. Again, I'm old, but I got this. I did an event in Yahats in Oregon. It's right there on the coast.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a metaphysical event, and there was a whole bunch of psychics there. And they had, this is when they legalized marijuana as recreational use in Oregon. And they had this lady selling it there.
Mm-hmm.
And she had this long ass tube. And I was like, fuck, what kind of, you know, how much weed is in here? And she goes, oh, no, it's Thai stick.
Oh.
You pull it out, and it's completely, it's so sticky.
Uh-huh.
And it's tied with, like, this string in there. It cost $600 for that whole thing. She sold it to me for $150.
Wow.
It took me, like, 3 months to smoke that whole thing.
I was going to ask how long that for that amount of
three
value.
Months, and yeah. It was amazing. The most amazing high. Have you ever smoked anything crazy like that before?
I don't think so.
Uh-huh. Do you like hash?
It's been a while since I smoked hash, too. I'm really basic. I'm like a baby stoner.
But at least you get stoned, though. So
yeah. I've smoked a few joints. I think Golani makes them. They're like rolled in hash. It's like a joint and then the outside. Or no, it's like rolled in keef or something. I don't know. It's
oh,
crazy.
Geez.
There's like hash in the joint and uh-huh. then it's like, it's really deluxe.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I need to go get, I love smoking joints, but I find that the ones that they roll in the dispensary, they don't burn as good as the ones that you roll yourself.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Well, that's just my opinion.
Huh. Yeah.
So
yeah.
Tell us where we can find you,
mm-hmm.
all your social media outlets, people that want to hook up with you, that want to know more about you.
Yeah.
Let them know.
So the best would be, I guess, my Twitter is Margolin Madison. It's Margolin Madison, Madison. My Instagram is Madison Margolin. My Facebook is Madison Margolin, but I recommend on Facebook to follow instead of friend, because I get a lot of friend requests from people I don't know, and at this point I don't accept them all.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a website where you can just email me through the site, and that's just madisonmargolin.com.
I want to thank you so much for coming on In Your Head, taking a chance with an unknown person, allowing me to come in here, give you a reading. You've never met me.
Mm-hmm.
I want to thank you so much for your time and the opportunity.
Thank you. This was really fun, and thank you for the reading. That was really special.
You are so welcome. I hope to have you on in the future to discuss the bigger and better things that you're doing as well, and maybe smoke a joint on air with you.
Yeah.
But we'll do that next time.
Yes.
So thank you so much, love. This is Chris Medina with In Your Head with the beautiful Madison Margolin.
Thank you.
Signing out.
Thanks.